My name is Virendra Marathe, by the way, and this work was done in collaboration with my colleagues in the Scalable Synchronization Research Group at Oracle Labs. That's Tim Harris, Yossi Lev, Victor Lochenko, and Mark Moyer. So first, a primer on data-driven parallelism. The idea over here is that dynamic data dependencies between data objects in a program drive the entire computation. So for instance, you could have a potentially huge collection of data objects and special handler functions attached to each of these objects, the squiggles, the black squiggles in the figure are these handler functions. And the association between the object and the handler function is as follows. If an object is modified, the corresponding handler function for that object is triggered for execution. And that handler function is typically bundled in a task to execute, and so this task could in turn modify more objects, which in turn could trigger more tasks. So as you can see, there is potentially a big cascade of tasks that get to execute. That's how you get a lot of parallelism in these applications. And data-driven parallelism and computation in general isn't a new idea. It has been around for quite a while, many decades now. In different forms, data flow, parallelism, several event-driven programming systems, and so on and so forth, which is good, lots of success in there. However, we think it's not good enough. A couple problems that exist are, first, this kind of model does not apply to all application domains out there, not easily at least. And the second, which is the focus of this talk, is that there is a big performance penalty you might have to pay if you just rely on these dynamic data dependencies to drive the entire computation. So I will illustrate the performance problem using this illustrative example of the single source shortest path algorithm or problem. The problem is that you're given a graph and a source node in the graph, and you want to compute the shortest distance and path of each other node in the graph from the source. So you start off with the source node, and a simple and I think intuitive way of doing this in a data-driven style is first to associate each node with a handler function. Let's call it relax neighbors. I'll get to the details of that function later on. And what happens is that you start the algorithm by simply initializing the source node's distance to zero, which triggers the handler function, that's relax neighbors for that node. This function in turn goes down the neighbor set of the source node and updates their corresponding distances. Edges are weighted, by the way, over here, and all the nodes in the graph are initialized to a distance of infinity. And these updates in turn can spawn off or trigger new tasks. And the question over here now, since we are relying entirely on dynamic data dependencies to drive the computation, is who gets to go next? And since we are basically relying on data dependencies, any one of these tasks can go next. Let's assume that the lower task, let's call it T2, gets to go first, and it updates the neighbor node that it sees. This in turn triggers a task for that neighbor node, which in turn does an update, and you end up having this chain of triggering and updating happening. And in the end, let's say that T1 finally gets a chance to make forward progress. T1 executes and writes the value 2 in the node that was updated originally by task T2. So what is happening over here is that T1 is basically rendering all the work done by task T2 useless. And since we are in the data-driven world over here, this can again lead to a chain of triggering and updating of data. And as you can see, what is happening over here effectively is all the work done by T2 and its successors is rendered completely useless by the work done by T1. So, and that's what this flash says. And the worst case we've seen that for certain graph structures, this can lead to an exponential amount of work. In practice, we've seen that this typically leads to several orders of magnitude of overhead for SSSP on a wide range of graphs. So what is the problem over here? The problem is simple: bad execution order of tasks. So if you happen to make a bad decision, the scheduler happens to make a bad decision in execution, in picking the next task to execute, you might end up having a lot of wasted work being done. So what we believe is that if we provided the programmer with a simple abstraction that lets him constrain the order in which tasks are executed, that will be of big help to potentially eliminate a lot of this wasted work. However, we have to play a delicate balance in that the abstractions we provide to the programmer don't have to be excessively constraining, because that might actually choke out a lot of parallelism from the application. So at the bottom of the slide, we have this quote-unquote constraint spectrum. On the left-hand side, we have excessive constraints. That's what happens in the classic Dijkstra SSSP algorithm, which is not parallel. And on the right extreme, we have no constraints at all, which, as you've seen, can lead to a lot of wasted work. So what we are looking for is sweet spots somewhere in between, which eliminate most, if not all, of the wasted work, and in the process, do not compromise a lot of parallelism in the application. So that's where this idea of constrained data-driven parallelism came up. It's basically a set of abstractions that helps programmers control the structure of a data-driven computation and thereby eliminate a lot of wasted work. We rely on basic abstractions such as tasks and special trigger objects that associate data with handler functions. And the key contribution of this paper is this this abstraction of phased execution of tasks, where all the tasks that are generated through these dynamic dependencies can be partitioned into a sequence of phases. A task can trigger another task either in the current phase or in the immediate next phase. That's all it can do, at least in the abstractions we have looked at so far. And we have another constraint, important constraint on this phase-based execution, in that all the tasks in the current phase have to finish executing before any task in the next phase gets to execute. So in other words, we have an implicit barrier between phases. We'd like to make it a statistical barrier in the future. We've already started conversations on that, and we should probably talk about that later. And the language constructs we envisage for our abstractions developed thus far are simple, at least to us. This is basically pseudocode. And first line represents data. The data is actually the integer a pointer a points to. The second line describes a trigger. So it's associating the integer that A points to with the handler function foo. And optionally, you have the deferred keyword, which indicates that the task that's going to execute foo will be scheduled for execution in the next phase. And on line 4, as you can see, the programmer modifies the integer pointed to A, and that in turn triggers the task for foo. And the last line has the special wait for tasks function. That helps the thread wait for all the tasks that have been triggered for execution. Question?
Yeah, that sentence encourages write first evaluation dependence.
Exactly, that was the motivating example for us to come up with this idea.
So how does this relate to Fox and X10 or Phasers and Habanero?
I haven't thought a whole lot about that. Maybe we should talk about this later on in detail. So one caveat, we haven't implemented any language level support or any compiler work. This is library implementation for now. I'll talk a little bit about the implementation later on. So revisiting the SSSP algorithm, basically the data-driven versions of the algorithm, on the left-hand side, we have what we call the naive data-driven approach, where you are basically triggering stuff right away whenever it's modified, whenever the appropriate data is modified. And on the right-hand side, we have essentially the identical implementation, but the only difference highlighted in this slide here is that we are using deferred triggering instead of immediate triggering. And this small difference leads to a huge difference in performance, as you will see later on. And what is this function body? It's basically the relax neighbors function that is associated with each vertex, and it basically goes down the neighbor set of each vertex and updates the distances of any appropriate vertices. So now we revisit the original illustrative example and see how the execution would proceed if we used deferred triggering. So we had the situation where T2 got to make forward progress and made its update. Note that since we are running in phases, we are already running in phase one, which is indicated at the bottom of the slide. T2 makes its update through a deferred trigger. That's why the task triggered by that update is deferred for execution in the next phase. And after that, T2 can go home, and T1 has to finish executing because it's still in phase one. Execution is in phase one. It gets to execute and write the optimal value in the corresponding vertex. That in turn can trigger another task, T4, but that's all. That's the only redundancy we end up having. Then after T1 goes away, the phase one has basically drained away, so we switch over to phase two. And T4 gets to execute first, it executes, makes an update, it's writing the optimal value over here, and which triggers another task for the next phase. And T3 doesn't have anything to do, so it just goes home. So there's little wasted work in all of this. The implementation just, yes?
So what if instead of a couple nodes you have a cluster? Like, it seems like with one deferred trigger in the data,
you can build limit regardless of what it is. No, we have one trigger per node in the graph. So each update to each node is going to trigger a different trigger, so to speak, which is going to process the neighborhood of that node in the graph.
Are you worried about getting your parallelism?
In this example, no, you don't get any parallelism. But as you'll see later on, we do get a lot of parallelism. Yeah. Now that is done automatically because this is a completely local computation that is happening. You are processing each node in a different task.
Who draws the phase boundaries?
It is drawn implicitly. All, as I said earlier, all the tasks can do is trigger another task either in the same phase or a task in the next phase.
So
in this particular example, in this algorithm, we are doing deferred triggering only. So any triggering that is happening in the next phase. There are applications we've looked at where there is a mix of immediate triggering and deferred triggering. That's in the paper, actually. Right. Yeah, that's what is happening over here. No, not quite, because you are updating. So suppose there are two guys who are trying to update the same node, right? And one guy goes ahead of the second one, and does the update. And if that update is an optimal value, then the second guy is not going to do the update. It's just going to go away because that's the algorithm, right? Only if the distance of my neighbor, current distance of my neighbor, is greater than the distance I compute from myself, then only I do the update. Otherwise, I don't do the update. Yeah. So we have a C++ library, and we are using it, work stealing based task scheduler. We are using the Chase-Love algorithm to do the work stealing for load balancing. Now I'll go to the performance results directly. All the tests that are reported, the results reported. Okay, not bad. were conducted on a two socket Niagara T2+ system. Each socket has 64 threads, so in all 128 threads. X-axis is number of threads. Y-axis is execution time, so lower is better. So as you can see, the curve over here and the input graph we've used for this, it was taken from the SNAP data set. We've experimented on a whole set of other graphs, and the performance patterns are similar across the board. So the naive algorithm that does immediate triggering scales really nicely, as you can see, which is great. However, it pales in comparison with the sequential Dijkstra version, which is the purple flat line, since it's sequential, and the blue curve for parallel Bellman-Ford. And note that the y-axis is in log scale. So the difference over here is over three orders of magnitude between the naive data-driven approach and Dijkstra, sequential Dijkstra. That's bad, right? But now you would ask, where does the phased version fall in this performance spectrum? And here is the curve, the green one at the bottom, for the phased version, which does really great. It scales, however, up to 32 threads, and after that, you see the performance deteriorating slightly. And that's because, we believe, of the intermediate barriers between these phases. However, the more interesting story is that of the naive data-driven approach. You start off with big overheads in performance, but if you look at it, since we are on log scale in the y-axis, we are getting super linear speed up as we go along. And the explanation for that lies in this graph. The y-axis over here is the amount of work done by each of these algorithms in terms of the number of nodes processed. And this is with respect to, relative to Dijkstra. Dijkstra is optimal in that respect, in that it processes each node only once. So as you can see, the red bars are for the naive data-driven approach, and the green bars at the bottom are for the phased data-driven approach. What happens with the naive data-driven approach is that the task scheduler we are using happens to produce a bad scheduling order for single-thread executions. And this bad scheduling order is basically why you get a lot of redundant or wasted work happening. And then once you start, yes? Not quite. When you have just one thread, there's no work stealing happening. That's getting a little ahead of me. And once you start having more threads, which you start having an increasing instances of work stealing, which starts to distort this bad ordering. And by the time you reach about 72 threads, there is so much distortion in this bad ordering that it is equivalent to random ordering of tasks. So a note. This work is not just about improving SSSP. I'll wrap up quickly. We have used and developed another abstraction called task groups and a phased version of it. And we've also done a lot of more detailed evaluation of SSSP itself and a clustering algorithm called communities and a social network analysis algorithm called between centrality. Lots of interesting details over there. So the takeaways, first is that task ordering matters a whole lot for many important data-driven computations. And we believe that if we provide the programmer with abstractions that helps him control or constrain the shape of this data-driven computation, that will help him reduce a lot of this wasted work. And phased execution of tasks does that to some extent. We'd like to improve it further, if possible. As we've seen, it gives a big performance boost, and that's not the end of the story, of course. We are interested in exploring more workload classes, which we hope will lead us to newer and better and more general abstractions, which continue to be as simple. And we are already working on a distributed implementation of this system, which in turn could lead to newer abstractions more suitable for that setting. That's it. Thank you for your time.
Constructs like in existing languages, like futures, maybe capture the type of dependencies that you're trying to describe through the task data-driven parallelism.
Yeah, we could possibly use that in an implementation, say in Java, for the same abstractions. The thing that we add to constructs like futures is this implicit barrier between a set of tasks that you have scheduled for execution, between two sets of tasks scheduled for execution, where one set will be executed, it can be executed in the future, but it is going to be executed before another distinct set of tasks is executed. So before the barrier. Right,
so you're adding
the barrier.
You're adding these dependency parameters that is in term which implements phases that does not necessarily exist in a future's implementation.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's thank our speaker again.